rushing for a shelter. There wasn't time.
Going back to your first posting then?
Well, after training at Kabbalah...
Where was that again?
In Lancashire.
How long was that for?
3 or 4 months, I think.
And you were learning Morse code?
Yes. Well, first we had to learn Morse code as WT, wireless operators, because in order to be able to read Morse code on the light, you had to be able to mentally hear sound first. So you had to be able to read Morse code by sound very much faster than you ever could read it by light. And we had to pass out at about 16 words a minute, which is quite fast. It's fleet fast. No naval chap passes out more than 10 words a minute. And in order to do that, we used to have to do 30 words a minute on the WT to get able to...
And how did you find that? Was that easy to pick up, or was it hard work?
No, it was hard work. You really had to work at it. And we also had to do, read hoists and fly hoists. That means signals by flags. And you had these lockers beside the parade ground and this great big mast with all these hoisting gear, and you'd get an instruction and you had to make a signal of some sort, and you'd have to pull out the right pennants, as they were called, clip them onto this hoist and hoist them up as fast as you could. And it was really quite hard. And then across the parade ground, the other team would be lying on their fronts with telescopes reading off the hoists. And then you reverse the order. They would do the hoists, and you'd have to go and read off the hoists. And if you know anything about the Navy, when the boat is coming into port, they're flying a vast number of flags. And this will tell you a great deal about them. And you have to be able to read these off and know. Like when a boat comes into harbour and it has got an infectious disease on board, it has the yellow flag hoisted, which tells everybody, all the ships in the harbour, that it's in quarantine and you can't go anywhere near it. But you have to know a vast number of all the pennants, and I've got my signal book still at home.
How much of the Morse code stays with you now?
Quite a lot. I probably go through the whole alphabet.
There was a story in the paper not long ago saying that Morse code has now been formally abandoned.
Yes, it has. Yes, it's no longer used. But I can still see instance where it could be useful. I mean, if you were alone on a hill, and I know this happened when I was in Wales, and you fall down at night and you have a torch, you could signal down the hill for help, and there'd be somebody there that would understand SOS, or realise that something was happening. So there are instances where I still think it's quite useful. I'm not sure if they've still stopped teaching cubs and guides the Morse code, because they had to learn it.
What was the atmosphere like at the training camp, and what were the backgrounds of the other people training with you?
Well, where we went to in Kabbalah, which is a very poor area of England, Lancashire, cobblestones all outside the camp. The girls that were in my, I don't know what they call class, they were called class, were 24 of us, and there were only 4 of us that you might have said had had any sort of a public school education. They were pretty poor girls, and this became very apparent with an incident that happened while I was there. Because we had a very zealous yeoman of signals who was teaching us. He'd been a destroyer yeoman, and he was determined that he wanted to get us all through and with the highest possible marks. And he used to keep us on the parade ground to the very last, when the rest of the classes had gone in. By the time we got in, there was pretty well no food left. It had all gone. Nothing was held back. because one class was missing. And there'd be horrible greasy remains of potatoes or a bit of sausage or something. And I complained about this because I was a class leader and got myself rather unpopular and eventually led a march on the officers' mess in order to get some results, which I did because in the end they held back a whole tray, you might say, of food for one class. And the reason I did it was that these girls had, I had an allowance from my father, but these girls had nothing but their pay, and they were having to go to the canteen at mealtimes and buy things, and they had no money. And I thought this was very wrong, but I did make myself a bit conspicuous, and I was rather unpopular with the officers.
But what about with your class? Were you popular with them?
Oh, certainly, because I'd stood up for them. And also with my yeoman of signals, because signal yeoman, because he said that it was wrong in the first instance that they didn't realize that a whole class wasn't in the dining room and food wasn't kept back automatically, but to have to fight for it was quite interesting.
So when you moved on from there, where did you go next?
Well, then we had a rather interesting situation. In our class, we actually had two girls from Scotland, two Scottish girls. And I had the connection with Cornwall, with our holiday house down at Rock. And we had to fill in forms as to where we'd most like to go, which area of Britain. And of course, Joan and I filled in Cornwall, because she would have come with me. Her parents were still in the West Indies, as mine were. And the two Scottish girls would obviously want to be in Scotland. Believe it or not, they sent us to Scotland and they to Cornwall, to Plymouth, in fact. I mean, we never quite worked out whether it was done intentionally. We didn't understand the policy of it, or how it could possibly be. And it really was quite a remarkable thing. Anyway, I got sent up to Loch Ewe in the Highlands, the second anchorage of the fleet, and they got sent down to Plymouth.
The first anchorage would have been Scarpa Flow?
The first anchorage is Scarpa Flow for the fleet, yes.
And what was life like at Loch Ewe?
Very hard work. We first were in the main base in Minnison huts of 24 wrens sleeping in one hut. And we were working on watches, and we were double banking Royal Marine signalers in order to learn what was necessary for the station, for the post signal station. And we used to have to go up by lorry up to the signal station, which was right up on a hill. And then they were posted out east, and we took over the signal station and moved into little huts with a cook up on this hill, and there were just four of us and a cook. And when the fleets came in, the convoys, because we were doing the Russian convoys, and they came across the Atlantic to Loch Ewe, and there they changed escort. We had to, all four of us, be on together in order to be able to keep the whole thing going. And the cook used to bring us up a great bowl of porridge, of which we all had a spoon each and used to just spoon it in and keep our eyes on the lights and keep going. And we were on literally for sort of something like 18 hours at a time when the signals were in. And nobody knew that we were only four wrens up there. Then unfortunately, we'd done so well, we had a senior officer come up to see us and discovered that this was the situation, and there was one almighty row. That no ordinary wrens as we were, I was a leading wren even. We were all just ordinary wrens. Recently qualified, but we'd done quite a good job getting the signals down, doing all the anchoring we had to. When these boats came in, we had to anchor them in the lock. And he ordered that we were double banked. And we were furious, because we were all friends. And we didn't want any other wrens to come up. But a very charming, luckily, warrant officer was sent up. And she was excellent. But luckily they left us alone.